funky.
Good morning, 6:39 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Alex Andrade is our state representative for District 2. That is the southern quarter, third, however you want to describe it, of Escambia County and the beachfront property in the south of Santa Rosa County. Alex, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew.
Hey,
how's everything going?
Good, good to see you. Before we get into stuff that's going on in Tallahassee, I did want to give you a chance to, you know, give your take on what happened in the election. Obviously, Jimmy Patronis won by a comfortable margin, but not by a landslide the way you would have expected based on the, you know, Republican-Democrat split. And, you know, of course, for the first time in, what, 30 or 40 years, lost Escambia County to Democrats. But your takeaway, or from the District 3 election of Nathan Boyles, you know, whichever, well, not election, but he wins the primary. One would expect he'll win the election. But your thoughts?
Well, yeah, I wasn't surprised by Escambia County. I mean, the city of Pensacola, if you just take the city itself and its boundaries, it went to Biden in 2020, and it went to Kamala in 2024. So I'm not surprised that Escambia County is bluer than the rest of the congressional district. I think Jimmy Patronis performed extremely well, given the fact that it was a special election and turnout just wasn't the same as it normally is. Republicans generally aren't, you know, special election voters in the way you might think. And as for House District 3, I'm extremely excited for Nathan Boyles. I think he's going to be a great addition to the delegation. You know, I'm just excited to have him as a partner now in Santa Rosa County. And, you know, I got to make sure he wins on June 1st in the general. But assuming all goes according to what I expected to go, Nathan's going to be a great addition to the team.
Yeah, and of course he won't be in on this session because, as you say, the election is coming up later, and he's not actually the representative. Although in a heavily Republican district, we assume he's likely to win that against the Democrat. One other thought is, you know, people keep asking me, like, what's your takeaway from Escambia County's, you know, Democrat win? And my answer is it means nothing because it's such a skewed scenario. With it's like doing a survey that gives you very statistically unreliable results because you don't have the right parameters to make sure that it's a statistically valid survey. That's kind of my take. Is that your take?
Yeah. I mean, like, you look at how much national money got pumped in by Democrats. I mean, 2 Chainz apparently came and did a concert in support of Gay Valamon. Like, I probably would have gone to a 2 Chainz concert.
Yeah, I know you would have.
You know what I mean?
That's funny.
you know, while you'd love to just, like, only have people that agree with you vote, the fact of the matter is there's people that disagree with you who vote, and those people were hoping to kind of snake a congressional seat back.
Right.
You know, from the Republicans. So they put in maximum effort, and I think Republicans put in maybe 60% effort. So the results make perfect sense to me.
Nice Deadpool reference, by the way. Okay, so let's talk about things that happened this week in session. The big brouhaha, as I read it, is that, you know, Danny Perez wants to give a sales tax cut to people, $5 billion spend that way to, you know, reduce the price of goods from 6% to 5.25%, especially with tariffs pending, or the effect of tariffs pending, that might be kind of advantageous. The governor, meanwhile, says, no, wait. I want to write every homeowner a check for $1,000. That's how I want to spend $5 billion. He's calling it a property tax rebate, but it's not really a property tax rebate. It's just you're eligible for the check or a stimulus or whatever you want to call it if you pay property tax as a homeowner. I know you're in the House. I know you're close to Speaker Perez, but what's your take on all this?
I want to cut both property tax and sales tax. And I think the vast majority of conservative Republicans, if they're honest with themselves, would agree with that. The fact of the matter is that this proposal, just to cut a $1,000 check to every homeowner using sales tax dollars, that's no more conservative than Biden suggesting loan forgiveness or our Medicaid program. There's no government handout that's conservative. So the fact that if this government handout proposal is coming from DeSantis doesn't suddenly make it conservative. It's robbing Peter to pay Paul. It's taking sales tax and sort of just giving out money to a specific subset of Floridians. It doesn't do anything, and it just feels designed to try and undermine a permanent sales tax cut, which would save Florida households north of like $700 a year potentially. we should all be supportive of conservative ideas, even if they weren't our ideas. And I think Governor DeSantis just needs to kind of get on board with that and understand that they don't have to be his ideas to be good and conservative. We should be cutting both property tax and sales tax. The only issue with property tax is it has to go on to a ballot initiative. It has to be passed by the voters. So we'll put that on the ballot. In the meantime, we'll cut sales tax. And, you know, hopefully Governor DeSantis can, like, figure out how to get along with people again.
You know, it's funny, when I first heard the alternatives, I was actually more inclined to go for the $1,000 because that's more than I would pay in sales tax in a year, because we're not big consumers. But then I started thinking about it, that I realized I had fallen prey to the classic, you know, lottery lump sum versus gradual payout. And if it's even $500 a year, I'm back to even in 2 years. And if it's 3 or 4 or 5 years down the road, then I'm making money every year. It's better for me as a citizen. I wasn't even thinking through the, well, you're taking sales tax money to give people a check over here that, you know, it's still a redistribution of money instead of an actual tax cut, which is, you know, a fair point. One of the things that comes up a lot in conversations with civic leaders, county commission, city council, of course, they gripe about you guys a lot. The most recent gripe, I think, is, I mean, it's a fair concern. They feel like all the mechanisms that they use for funding their general revenue in the city or the county are being are attacked, and all the alternatives they could potentially use are being, you know, prohibited as well. Everything from, you know, enterprise funds to property taxes, you know, that, like, all of this is under assault, and they don't know how they're going to fund their operations. So, Alex, you heard the question, you know, our local leaders often feel like they are under attack by Tallahassee, that the funding they have is being taken away, the funding they could replace it is not being allowed, whether it's homestead exemptions or reduction in property tax or anything else. Your thoughts?
I wouldn't view every single bill proposal as an attack, right? I mean, this is the time of the year where a bunch of people get together in Tallahassee, share ideas, and advocate for what they think the best policy is. We just talked about one disagreement on tax policy. The fact of the matter is that not all of these taxing and spending policies are going to pass in any given year, and we're not going to, you know, pass all of them at one time and suddenly tell county commissioners just to go home, their job is done for the year. So like, it's the same as, like, when the headlines come out when a Democrat files a bill about gun control, and these headlines are kind of scare tactics and stuff. Like, some of these bills aren't going to pass. Some of these bills are going to be debated but not pass. Some of these bills are going to result in studies to see if they're going to benefit or harm local communities. You know, even with this proposal on cutting property taxes, I'll be the first to tell you it would be dishonest to say you can't eliminate that source of revenue without replacing it with another reliable source of revenue. If local government officials fall prey to, you know, overreacting to headlines, I would just say that's human nature, and, you know, I've been through this for 6 years, so I've seen it, but I also consider them very good partners. I've always taken their input and worked very well with the ones who are acting in good faith, so no, I think it'll all work out.
That's the question I was going to ask, because I know every time I hear them say that, I think, well, what they really seem to be saying is, oh my God, Tallahassee is taking away our ability. They want to eliminate property taxes. How are we going to pay for the police? Well, my answer is, I don't know yet because I haven't seen a proposal, but I assume it's going to be consumption, sales tax, VAT, something like that. I feel confident Tallahassee is not going to, you know, a Republican legislature and a governor are not going to tell local governments that they don't have money to pay their police. They'll find an alternate funding mechanism. Fair? You guarantee that, right?
Yeah, it would be malpractice. It would be completely incompetent if we didn't.
Right. Exactly. And that's why I almost am, like, embarrassed to ask the question, because the concern presumes that you guys are all terrible at your job and don't care about the state, the county, and the city. You know, and you never like to start from that premise. But, of course, if you start from that premise, you can get to any conclusion that you want. Let's see. One of the things that you guys have been working on, obviously you've been working on budget stuff. Can you maybe – this is a simple question, but – I hear on the one hand that we're suffering a deficit. We've no longer getting, you know, federal money in a lot of ways. The budget itself, you know, the income is reduced. And yet at the same time, we're doing these budget, you know, giveaways, $5 billion here or there, whatever it adds up. Are we up? Are we down? Are we just fine? Like, what is our actual position as far as the budget goes?
So we do projections out about 3 years for our financial outlook. And when you talk about a deficit or facing a deficit, what that measure is really is like our measure of revenue, which is projected to continue to go up, just not up as quickly as it has in a couple of years past. Revenue continue to go up, but our budget going up at a faster rate. And that's really all we're talking about is just the trend in our budget increasing at an incline that is steeper than the trend in our revenue collection. It's not the end of the world. It's something we as responsible, you know, government officials have to go take into account. But yeah, if our spending continues on the trend line that it's on and our revenue continues on the trend line that it's on, we will suddenly have a $3 to $7 to $9 billion deficit in a couple years. And that's just why we're, you know, proposing smaller budgets. We're proposing finding ways to cut. And frankly, we don't even need DOGE to find all the inefficiencies in state government at the moment. So it's been a target-rich environment for finding efficiencies, Andrew.
Yeah, as you have explained many times, and, you know, that's good news. Somebody's doing the work. It's sad news that the work is so easy to do, right? That's, you know, you wish it, you really had to explore in order to find places to trim. The fact that you basically find them everywhere you look is disheartening.
You turn over a rock and you find 1,000 missing vehicles.
is that just a turn of phrase or is that a real thing?
Thousands of missing vehicles, unaccounted for vehicles in state agencies right now that they can't account for. It's just bizarre.
There's a part of me that doesn't want to know, but this is the classic conservative argument against large government of any kind, right? The farther away it is from the people who can see it and ask questions about it, the easier it is for fraud, waste, and abuse to take place, whether that's, you know, Tallahassee or D.C. or anything else, you know, the closer the better, right?
We're not D.C. We balance our budget, but if you have someone who's kind of, you know, more focused on other things than managing the government efficiently, then, yeah, that's when mistakes start happening. And we're just catching a lot of mistakes right now.
Can you maybe just take a second and talk about the ballot initiative reform? Because that's something that's gotten a lot of headlines. Of course, in our last election, we saw loads of money dumped into Florida on the basis of trying to push a few referenda that, you know, also for the collateral benefit of who you get out to vote and all this. But this has been something that DeSantis has talked quite a bit about. And I know the headlines have been, you know, very sky is falling, Chicken Little kind of stuff. You know, they're trying to destroy the ballot initiative process. What's your perspective on the reform? What are they and what do you think about the proposals?
Well, first and foremost, it should not be easy to pass a constitutional amendment.
Amen.
It should be the opposite of easy. But in this circumstance, what the focus was on was how these organizations collect petitions, because you have to collect a certain number of petitions. I think it's 8% of the voting population in Florida has to sign a petition to put it on the ballot. And so the bill this week limits out-of-state funding to pay people. It limits incentive funding, like paying certain amount per ballot. It's designed to try and make sure that these ballots, that these petitions are being signed by actual Floridians, and that we don't have incentives for people to forge petitions on a regular basis. What we saw in a lot of circumstances was high numbers of these petitions, being forged, being fake, and that unfortunately still resulted in a ballot initiative making it on the ballot, for Florida voters to vote on. So I think limiting out-of-state money and raising the standard for these petitions themselves are both good policies. I mean, if something needs to be changed in our Constitution, it should be heavily supported by Florida voters. And the bill this week is just focused on making sure that we can guarantee that it's Florida voters who are actually incentivized and desirous of the change.
You know, it's amazing the level of scrutiny and protocol and form filling that we implement or is implemented in order to avoid fraud in, for example, hurricane recovery and, you know, debris collection, and really anywhere that you have the opportunity to make money as a kind of bounty on an activity. And then when you turn around and try to implement those same or similar kinds of controls on the very key process of exercising democracy and changing the Constitution, all of a sudden, you know, these are terrible protocols. You shouldn't be doing anything like that. Nobody would ever try to fudge around the system on the basis of making money for it. Well, yeah, they would. That's the whole issue. Alex Andrade, our state representative for District 2, as always, sir, thank you for the time. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Andrew.